This week's episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra is sponsored by Midwest Action. Midwest Action is a record and tape label as well as a blog based here in our hometown of Chicago. Midwest Action showcases the best and brightest in the Midwestern music scene, covering genres of all types, from lo-fi garage rock to hip-hop, psychedelic rock, and more. For more information on their releases and events sponsored by Midwest Action, you can head to MidwestAXN.com or search MidwestAXN at Bandcamp. Midwest Action. Listen local. Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday, and welcome now to the top 10 films of 2019 portion of our retrospective on the year that just went by us, 2019, here at Infinite Canvas Ultra. I'm Daniel Fioria.
And I'm Michael Lane, taking a sip of water.
Sip of crisp, cool water.
Yeah,
That pure water. I am very excited to do this episode.
Mm-hmm.
At least I am kind of expecting, I'm sure you probably feel the same, this is probably going to be the most lengthy, extensive talk we probably do in this week's series.
Maybe. I mean, we've talked about a lot of these movies to major extents before, True. So maybe, you know, cut it down a bit, but I bet it will be pretty lengthy.
Yeah.
Knowing us, knowing how much we love film, but...
And there's a good reason for that. It's because, in my opinion, 2019 was just an incredible year for films.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, it's really nice that we had a year where making a top 10 list is kind of hard, because you're thinking back on everything that came out and you're just trying to pick and choose which should go in the top 10, you know, placeholders. And it was hard to do that this year. There were a couple things that kind of shifted around in where I would place these films, and I'm really happy to have that.
I was gonna say, there's a lot that I really liked from this year, a lot, and having to cut them out of the top 10 was very tough. There's a handful of these that I wouldn't be surprised if they show up on your list,
mm-hmm.
but just didn't make it onto my top 10. There's actually one that I recently thought of just like yesterday. I remembered it and I was like, oh, I don't know that I can make it onto the list because it's just gonna be too hard to make another change.
Yeah.
Shout out to Knife Plus Heart, but
yeah, I was gonna ask which one was it.
Yeah, Knife Plus Heart, which is a really, really incredible movie, but I just totally forgot about it, and we're here doing it. So
that's good, you still had 10 other movies that you looked at that on your list, and it's like, yes, I'm proud of this, this is what should be here.
And even more, I have my top 10 film list going up tomorrow, my written list, and I have honorable mentions in that list as well, so you'll be able to at least know the other five that didn't make it, but let it be known that there was even more than that. There was a lot of movies this year, and I saw over 50, I think, this past year. Maybe not all in theaters, but I saw probably about 50 new movies altogether.
Before we get into this, are there any films that maybe slipped past you this year that you really wanted to see, that you're bummed that you couldn't see before we did this?
It's a great thing you said that, because that's also another part of my list that's going to go up tomorrow, is the films I have here. I have it written as films I sadly missed but would wager they'd have had a chance to make this list. That's In Fabric. I don't know if you heard of that one, mm-hmm. the A24 like horror movie about like a dress, like the devil takes over a dress, I guess. I don't know. That movie seems really cool.
I really wanted to see that.
Climax, that movie I really wanted to see. Last Black Man in San Francisco.
That's on my list as well.
Is on Amazon, and I've been meaning to watch it, but just haven't had the chance. Ford versus Ferrari, I really wanted to check out. Mm-hmm. Just unfortunately never made it out. And then Honey Boy, which...
Absolutely.
There were just no theaters showing that, unfortunately.
Yeah. I feel like that more than likely would have been one that would have wound up in my top 10. I have really good feelings about that movie.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones for me was High Life with Robert Pattinson, the A24 film.
Was that this year?
That was March or April. Really would have loved to have seen that, especially a bit of a spoiler for my list. It would have been interesting if I had two films with Robert Pattinson in my
two top 24 10. Pattinson movies.
Yeah, that's another thing. There's a lot of A24 on this list. What a great year for them. Queen and Slim was one that I really would have loved to have seen.
That's another one this list. For me.
Yeah. Little Women would have been great to have seen, but I never got around to checking that out. I know you caught that.
I did catch it. I liked it, but it didn't make it into even my honorable mentions. But it's a good movie. Mm-hmm. I definitely enjoyed it a lot.
I think mainly those. There's actually one that I got to recently that I had to get to before we started making these lists, because I just had to know what this film was like, and thankfully we'll touch upon that in a moment. I'm excited. There's a film I'm very excited to talk about, because I just watched it recently, and it just like
something that immediately... I've seen maybe, or just
we'll find out.
All right.
Yeah. Basically just those films. I feel like overall I saw pretty much everything I wanted to check out.
One that landed on my list just yesterday, because it won Golden Globe for Best Animated Film, was Missing Link.
Yes, I forgot about that movie.
I kind of didn't even know was a... Like, I remember seeing ads for it, and I, like, just never even checked in on it to see, like, if it was any good or not. Just, like, I was like, whatever. And it just won the Golden Globe over Frozen 2, Toy Story 4. Like, you know, those are heavy hitters. And for this random, I believe it's stop motion animated. Just like this random movie.
About like Bigfoot or like some type of like, you know, Yeti type creature.
Yeah. Apparently that movie's supposed to be really good. So now that's kind of on my list to see at some point.
I want to say that one came out in March.
Yeah, that was an early one.
Pretty early in the year. It's always kind of sad. It's like very seldom I feel like there's movies that come out around that time that stick with me that much. There might be a couple on this list, but
I mean, it's hard with movies because a lot of the really heavy hitters come out in the fall, right? That's always been the case, especially because they're all trying to vie for Oscars, and that's when everyone's getting the buzz for all that stuff, so... but it was a really great year overall. There's a lot of really great movies on my list. I'm very, very excited to talk about them.
I don't know if you felt the same way, but it's kind of interesting, like, looking at this in comparison to our top fives so far that we had when we first started this show. I feel like it's vastly different and just way more saturated with really great films.
Yeah, I mean, that again comes with, like... The fact that a lot of heavy things come out at the end.
I wanted to bring that up.
Really shifted in that time.
Because it's like, it felt like at that time it was just kind of, you know, I don't know, like it felt almost hard to make even a top five. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just like what to definitively place as some of the best of the best. But yeah, now that we're here, this is going to be a great discussion.
And I feel really good about my choices here.
Absolutely. All right, let's kick it off. Yeah. Number 10.
Oh, you didn't want to take a break first?
Nope.
Let's just do it. All right.
That's how excited I am.
No break this episode.
Well, maybe, because we might have to...
Well, we'll take a break probably halfway through this list. We'll take a break for sure.
But yeah.
But for my number 10, you want me to start?
Go for it.
All right. My number 10, I'm picking The Farewell.
Excellent choice.
Man, I really enjoyed this movie. Of course, it's directed by Lulu Wang, starring Awkwafina, who I believe just won the Golden Globe for Best Actress.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
So great.
I wish that her grandmother would have gotten nominated for something, because I really thought she was such a star in that movie. But The Farewell is such a good, heartfelt, just a feel-good movie. It's maybe, like, the most feel-good movie of the year.
Absolutely.
Even though, like, the subject matter is pretty pretty sad, you know, just about the movie being, for those who don't know, this is an A24 movie, a little indie drama about this woman who's, like, in her 20s and lives in America, but she's originally from China. That's Awkwafina's character. And she goes back to her homeland, to China, meet with her family because there's news that her grandmother is sick, and, like, you know, ill, like she's going to die soon. Not that she like feels the effects of it. She's like still very much alive and you know, feels good, but there's some illness that will likely take her life fairly soon. And the cultural like China's cultural you know, the ramifications behind this is the family doesn't tell the grandmother. And that's like just a cultural thing in China that they sometimes won't tell family members if there's bad news in that way, mm-hmm. Just so that they can get like the most out of, you know, their family members before they pass away. And it's actually like a very, very sweet, it's a very sweet thing. And I just really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really funny. And again, just such a, it's like a really well-written drama about just this family and, you know, going through this hard time, but trying to make the most out of it. It's a really sweet movie.
It's, yeah, that film is phenomenal. It's beautiful. It's funny. It's just amazing seeing a film that just portrays family so well. Mm-hmm. When you're viewing them on screen, it feels like you're in the room. It feels like you get glimpses of being with your own family. It just feels so real and just so authentic, and it's just definitely a cut above you know, comedies, like, you know, kind of lighthearted genres,
yeah,
like this. Cut above what those films usually go for. It just feels so just natural. Every performance is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah, I really loved it, but there's excuse me, there's so much that came out this year that it sadly slipped into my 10th spot, but it's, I think that's a great position to be in, honestly, in this year.
It's not mine, but it's a little bit higher.
We'll
get to it soon. number 10 for me is Ari Aster's follow-up to Hereditary, Midsommar.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. Hereditary, if we were making this show last year, that would have topped my film list for that year.
Spider-Man?
Yes.
Even over Spider-Man?
Yeah. After, like, rewatching it, because I rewatched it before we had seen this, before we had seen Midsommar, just even better on the second watch, in all honesty. And that was a movie that I could not watch after seeing it in theaters. Like, I owned it on Blu-ray for a year, and just could never bring myself to put it on, just because it's such a haunting, just brutal experience in the film. Just so expertly made, so great. A classic, in my opinion. I think it's like just a 10 out of 10 film.
Yeah.
Midsommar had a lot of expectations to live up to for me. I don't think it quite necessarily met them, but I think it's great.
It comes close.
It does.
Yeah, it's a really great movie, but I would also agree that it doesn't hit the highs that Hereditary did. And also Hereditary, I guess, was such a surprise hit, whereas Midsommar, like you said, there was so much expectation, so much hype built around it just from, you know, being such a fan of Hereditary, that, it was kind of a bit of a disappointment in some ways, I suppose. But, yeah, overall, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's great. For those that don't know, Midsommar is about this young woman, Dani, who has gone through a really traumatic experience in her life, and her friends, who are students at a university, they go to Sweden and partake in the Midsommar Festival in Sweden. You know, befriend the group of people that they meet, and they live with them, and things go very awry, that's all I'll say. It's definitely a film where just gotta get that basic premise in your mind, know what you're going into, and expect a complete thrill ride from there, and quite a grisly one, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very violent film.
I mean, it also starts out with one of the most just, man, the opening to that movie is, talk about cold opens, you know, like that movie starts with just one of the most depressing, horrifying openings to a movie ever. It's
the cause of Danny's misery, which we won't say what that is, in case you haven't seen it. Don't want to spoil too much. Well, many of you probably know. Many of you have seen this movie. but yeah, no, I think it's a great follow-up to, like I said, a classic film. And I'm super impressed with it. I was really happy with what I got. Every performance in it is great. Great script, great filming, gorgeous looking. Like, that's definitely a huge contrast from Hereditary to this.
Yes.
This film is Hereditary literally just like looks like staring at depression
sure
and like just
very dark
anguish.
film.
It's so dark, just like so many dark just shadows and colors in that film. This is just bright, vibrant, beautiful. You really see this country land and all the like, beautiful things it has to offer. It's a gorgeous looking
Can
film.
like barely think of daytime scenes in Hereditary, and I can barely think of nighttime scenes in Midsommar. It's a very, very separate contrast there. It's really great what Ari Aster was able to do, making these two films that are both very similar in like thematic ways, but then yeah, just the contrast of what they look like and kind of the stories that they tell. Yeah, it's really phenomenal. I love this movie, and it unfortunately did not make my top 10. There was a
Interesting.
lot of great movies this year.
Interesting. And I'm kind of happy about that, because I feel like there's no knock on this film, but I feel like it's kind of, in terms of people I know or have talked to, it's kind of ranking a little too high. And like, I just feel like it's there was stuff that was way more compelling than this. But I do love this movie.
I think one of my issues with this movie is maybe overstays its welcome. It's a long movie. It's 2.5 hours long. And it feels like it, as far as I can remember, when we saw it.
I think I could have ran at like a decent like 145 maybe.
Even like 2 hours would have been fine, but 2.5 hours, especially for horror movies, that's really pushing it. That's a long, long movie. And yeah, you can definitely tell that there were moments that probably could have been edited down. But, it's still a phenomenal movie, and it's very much like one of those slow burn kind of horror films. But it picks up pretty fast, honestly.
And the avenues that it goes down are really just you gotta see it to believe it,
Some of the
folks.
most memorable scenes of this year, some that I
Absolutely.
definitely won't get out of my head. But
So and it definitely sticks with you in a way like Hereditary did. Maybe not to the level where it's like I find the movie so devastating that like I can't really watch it because it's just like so just sad and visceral. But yeah, with this, like, it definitely heightens the disturbing elements as opposed to like the tragic elements. It's definitely a B-side to the A of Hereditary. It's a great follow-up. I'm excited to see what Ari does next.
Yeah,
I carry
I hope he does like a trilogy of sorts. Like
That's
I hope
what I
there's
want
another one
too.
like
Some
this.
one that kind of, thematically sticks to a theme or,
Yeah.
motif. Like it's great. I've heard that he doesn't really want to do something like this in the next go around, but I could go for one more. I'm
Yeah,
sure it'd be
seriously.
great.
Yeah. One interesting thing I'll say about this movie is that I feel like I haven't heard anyone say they disliked it. Whereas I remember a lot of Hereditary, with Hereditary, I remember a lot of people really either disliking the whole movie or not getting it, or especially not liking the ending to Hereditary, which I love the ending to Hereditary. I think
It's
it's one of the
great.
best parts of that movie. For me personally, but I feel like I haven't heard anyone say anything bad about Midsommar. And that
No.
might come from the fact that, I'm sure a lot of the advertising was like from the guy who made Hereditary, and so people who didn't like that probably didn't go see this, and it was probably more of a centralized audience for Midsommar. I'm pretty sure it didn't do nearly as well as Hereditary.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, no, it's interesting that I haven't heard like anyone say anything bad about Midsommar. It's all been glowing.
Yeah, that's
That's
good.
great. I mean, I think this movie is really great. But yeah, it just didn't hit the heights of Hereditary for me.
Yeah, same here. But yeah, despite that, phenomenal movie. Absolutely love it. Yeah, Hereditary at number 10 for me.
All right. Moving on from there, moving from horror movie to another horror movie for me. I'm picking Ready or Not, directed by.
That's another one that I never got to, that I really wanted
Oh
to
my God. Directed by Matt Bettinelli Olpin and Tyler Gillette, also known as, I believe they go as Radio Silence, is what they're typically like known as when they write together. Ready or Not is one of the most fun times I had watching a movie this year. I unfortunately didn't get to see it in theaters, and I it always sticks out in my head when we saw It Chapter Two, and I remember like the posters for Ready or Not, and like there were showings of it, and I just remember like wanting to have gone and seen that instead of seeing it chapter two. Because this movie, Ready or Not, would have been a blast to have seen in an audience. This movie is, it's laugh out loud funny, it's exciting, it's surprising. The ending to this movie would, I would expect, would have people hooting and hollering in the audience. Like, no doubt. It is so fucking great.
That's awesome.
I seriously think that Ready or Not has one of the best, ballsiest endings of a movie I've seen in a long time. It's really something to be seen. But really, Ready or Not is a horror comedy set around this woman played by Samara Weaving, who's fantastic in this movie. She is like, you know, she could be at the level of like Margot Robbie in a few years, you know, like she is like a really great, like out of nowhere actress. Like this is like something like, you know, Margot Robbie in Wolf of Wall Street.
That's awesome.
She like really carries this movie. Plus she also looks very much like Margot Robbie, so that's why I picked that one. But this movie is about her. She marries into this rich family, and one of the things that the rich family always does when someone marries into the family, or you know, whatever, they always pick a game that night. So they have the wedding at their family estate, and then that night they have to pick a game, and it's like randomly chosen what the game is, and it's just like a thing that the whole family does. Unfortunately for Samara Weaving's character, she is given the one game that is not the one you want, which is basically hide and seek. Where she goes off to hide, and this is like unbeknownst to her, but she goes off to hide, and the rest of the family has to capture her and kill her. It's a game. It's a deadly game of hide and seek, and it's just a brilliant setup. I loved all the family. Like all the characters are really great. They're just like these pompous asshole rich people. It's also this movie's a really good, you know. It like conveys a message of, you know, just how shitty rich people can be and just how they don't care about us being the middle class or the lower class people,
working class people.
And it's just a really smart film. It's like I said, very exciting and yeah, it's a lot of fun. And again, the ending is, man, you just gotta see it. It's so good. It's so good.
I really need to watch that.
I can't recommend it enough.
That's definitely one, yeah. Since I even forgot to include that in my movies I haven't seen yet. Yeah. I've really been wanting to watch this. I've heard it's great. Another film that just kind of popped into my head was Crawl. That was another film that
That was a good one.
Totally wanted to see.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Kind of like disaster thriller kind of was like. So.
Yeah. That's a good one. I'll just, for Crawl, I'll say it's a good watch, but it's not like, you know, it's not like a very amazing movie or anything, but Ready or Not really, really hit me. It like hit all the right notes for me. So
you gotta check that out soon. Definitely. Yes. So my number nine pick is Marriage Story, the, Netflix exclusive, directed by Noah Baumbach, starring, Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver. Scarlett Johansson playing Nicole, Adam Driver playing Charlie, the couple that this movie is about. This is definitely an actor's film, and it's just so refreshing to see something like this. And the way it's done, it has this, just from the way it looks, just kind of like, you know, a vintage sort of like feel to it. It kind of feels like a film that maybe would have came out in the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, very much, like, reminds me of, like, Woody Allen.
Yeah, I was just about to say. Yeah.
And, but it's places it now. Mm-hmm. That aspect of it's great. And then just gotta get into just the sheer intimacy that's achieved and from the filmmaking of this. It's great. I mean, obviously, story is cut and dry. This is about a, you know, couple in New York, aspiring actors who decided to call their relationship quits, they have a child together, and you just see how it unfolds, and it's done in such a way that just feels so real, like you are going through the experience with them the whole way through, and it's just such a moving and powerful experience because of it.
Yeah, it's a testament to the filmmaking, I think, like what you said about how the film is shot and the way that it looks, like it really transports you into their world and makes you feel one with them, like you're in the room with them. And very rarely the movie ever gets to like close-ups, and the one time that I can think of that it really does is like one of the most explosive and best scenes of the year. I think this movie is devastating. Like, it ruined me. I was like done for after watching this movie. But I love it. Yeah, it'll show up on my list again. So later on. So maybe I'll talk a bit more about it then. But I thought this was a really great movie.
Absolutely amazing film, and it's just nice to see something like this. Just something with that feeling. Just great film. Absolutely loved it, and gotta give huge respects to Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. Two of the best performances you'll see in any film this year.
Yep.
Absolutely deserve any kind of, you know, Oscar nominations they can get for that. But yeah, just amazing film. Absolutely loved it. And definitely watch it. You all have Netflix, no excuses. Right. Just go put it on. It's a great film. Yeah. And gotta give big props to Netflix too. This did not make my list, but I mean, that and The Irishman this year, come on. That was great. It's definitely,
like, and back to back too. Like, I think they were a week apart from each other.
Definitely following. They have a good track record going. I mean, Roma, from I believe 2 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing film.
They've definitely been stepping it up. I'm really surprised because a lot of Netflix movies in the past have been just dog shit. And there still are some that aren't great. You know, they just put out that Michael Bay movie, which I'm sure is a Michael Bay movie. And there's, you know, there's a bunch that they're still making those Adam Sandler movies. No hate against Adam Sandler. We love him now, but
it's true. But to get directors like Scorsese and Bombeck, though, to do original films for the platform, it's great.
Did you ever see the Meyerowitz stories? That he did for them before this?
Yeah, actually.
With Adam Sandler, actually. That's a pretty good one. That was one of the better Netflix movies of years past.
No, I'll definitely have to watch that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my number 9. What's your number 8, Michael?
All right, down to number 8. I am going with my boy, John Wick, Chapter 3.
Nice.
Parabellum. John Wick Chapter 3 is just, it's everything you want from a John Wick movie. It's seriously, I think these movies have been getting better each time, and it's crazy. The trajectory of this series for me is wild, because the first time I saw the multiple times I saw the trailer for the first movie before it came out, I was like, why are we doing this? Who gave people money to make this, you know? just about the conceit of, like, Keanu Reeves being an assassin who wants to kill people because they killed his dog. Like, it just sounded so stupid.
Mm.
And, you know, it's kind of dumb. It's kind of, you know, ridiculous. But that first movie was just phenomenal. The second movie, even better than that. It just upped the stakes and built that world in such grand ways. And then with Chapter 3, like, they just went all out. Just so many specific kills that I can point to, sequences that are amazing.
Best fight scenes we'll see in any film this year.
Yeah.
I just rewatched John Wick, Chapter 3 recently.
I still need to watch it again.
Yeah.
But, I can still distinctly remember that knife scene in, like, the knife museum.
It's amazing.
Man, that scene is the best. The book kill, the horses, the motorcycle sword fight, you know, like, there's so much.
It's like a compilation of just things you want to see in an action movie done to, like, in just such a perfect way.
And the ending, you know, when the storming on the hotel is so great, and the Halle Berry's character and the inclusion of her and her dogs, like, seeing the through line of, like, the first movie, the dog dying, and then he gets a dog in the second one, but it doesn't really get to do anything. But then the third one, like, the dogs are fucking dudes up.
Yep.
It's just, like, this great arc of the dog story.
I hope they come back for 4.
Yes, me too. I really just, you know what you're getting with John Wick 3. It's just as good as it's ever been, even better in my opinion, and yeah, I love this movie. And, I mean, you also, in this movie, get a couple actors from the Raid series.
Exactly.
Fighting John Wick. You just know that's great.
Absolutely.
That final sequence With the fist fighting between John Wick and the multiple enemies he has to fight is phenomenal. Again, like Dan said, it's like the best fight scenes you'll see in a movie.
And rewatching it too, I just forgot how great just a lot of the side characters in this movie is. Like Lawrence Fishburne's character is great, seeing them, you know, together again from Matrix to this. Blank on the name of the. He's a character actor.
Ian McShane's great. Lance Reddick's great.
Yeah. It's just filled with such great side performances, and it's just so, it's exactly what you want out of an action movie.
Yes.
And I'm like, the John Wick series just fulfills perfectly what an action movie should be. It's just super engaging, but like, it has, you know, big bombastic action scenes, but they're just so meticulously crafted.
Oh, yeah.
And just, there's so many just interesting things going on.
It's like it's
in those scenes.
It's all these people who are at the top of their game, all making this one movie, and it's so great. And even on top of all of the fights and the spectacular action and everything, just the world of John Wick is so interesting in itself. The entire world of assassination and everything, like, it's so brilliant.
I mean, this in a really endearing way. Like, it feels like a video game. You literally have bits where John Wick is just running through the streets. He goes to a building, he finds an object and takes a coin out of it, and then he goes and fights some guys because they found him. It's the best video game movie that's not about a video game.
Right.
It's really great.
It's so special.
Yeah,
this is a great series.
Absolutely.
I love this movie so much.
Can't wait for the next one.
Yep.
Crazy enough, the John Wick 4 comes out the same year as the Batman.
Oh, right, yeah. And the same day as Matrix 4, remember? Yeah,
that's right.
Crazy.
That's right. That's
two Keanus in one day.
That's not enough. I'm saying it's too much, but it's not enough.
Maybe they'll time travel Bill and Ted into that date, too. Could you imagine?
Three Keanu movies in one day.
Oh, my God.
I'd see all of those.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm totally in.
Hey, Samara Weaving is supposed to play one of their kids in that movie, in the new Bill and Ted. So I'm down to see that.
That's awesome.
Great for her to get, like, a big role from Ready or Not to that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, that was my number eight. Moving on.
My number eight, I cannot wait to talk about this because I just saw it. I had to see this before we went and made this list, and I'm so glad I did because it was just so needed. It is Gaspar Noé's Climax.
Ah, okay.
Oh my God. What a movie.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot even believe what I saw with that. It is one of the most brutal, intense films I've seen this year easily, maybe in the last 5 years. It's all at once just like a super punishing experience, but absolutely breathtaking. And just, man, okay, so just basically the premise of this, it follows a French dance troupe that gets together. It's like an ensemble of about...
Is this movie French?
Yes.
Okay, it's in French.
There's bits of English, because some of the people in the ensemble speak English.
Gotcha, okay.
So yeah, French dance troupe. This is actually, crazy enough, based off of real events. This allegedly happened in 1996. And it feels very of its era, but crazy enough, feels very now. Like, this film really, like, kind of capitalizes on, like, 90s nostalgia, especially, like, in fashion and just, like, stuff like that in such a perfect way. Like, it feels contemporary.
Sure, like the dance hall music or something.
Oh, yeah. The soundtracks of this thing, I need to buy, because not only are just the original tracks for this incredible, it's just an all-house rave, like, dance music collection of tracks. Yeah, the tracks in this are incredible. Like, the songs made for the film, just the tracks they picked, there's Daft Punk, Aphex Twin, lots of, like, 90s electronic luminaries. Because of this movie, I will never hear Rollin' and Scratchin' by Daft Punk the same way again, because it is used to hideous effect. This movie is rough. Like,
drugs or something.
So it's just in this one room... Not room, this one building. It's like a, just, you know, complex, like a studio. Dance troupe gets together, you know, do a routine, hang out. And then the sangria that they're drinking is somehow spiked with LSD. And it is a nightmare. Like, it is, this movie, it's literally like watching a horrible, horrible nightmare come to life on screen. It is just filled with so many amazing just camera tricks and just creative shots where you kind of can't even really distinguish what's happening, but like when you kind of do get glimpses of clarity, it's like, oh god, like maybe that's kind of good that I can't really like make this out. It's just insane. And it's like really a film that is a couple different films kind of all together. The start of this film is about almost 10 to 15 minutes of footage of just these one-on-one interviews with the entire troupe. It's like documentary style. And you basically get to know every character and know their backgrounds and their motivations right away. So for a movie where it's literally just dance segments, a party, and then, you know, the initial plot kind of follows through, you know everybody. You know everybody before it starts. And it's just such an incredible way of formatting this film. Like, it is, it does feel like it's in parts, but in such a good way. There was one bit where it kind of like was towards the middle of the movie, and you know, you've wrapped up a bunch of like really just insane and beautifully shot dance sequences, and it just kind of closes out, and then it comes back, and it felt a little awkward to me at first, but after finishing the film and seeing what the final, you know, result was supposed to be, it's great. I wouldn't change anything about it. I think this film is just, god, it's just, it's such an experience.
And it's included on Prime, so I'm going to watch that very soon.
Keep the noise, like, maybe kind of low on this, not just because it is, like, loud music-wise, but I am not kidding. I think for the last half hour, there is somebody screaming or moaning or making some type of just,
my neighbors maybe don't want to hear noise. This.
Yeah. Especially the screaming. I mean, you will, I don't think I've ever heard more screaming in a film than in this movie. So Jesus. Keep it kind of low. You might wake up the neighbors, but that's what makes this film just so intense. It's just like so violent, but like so beautiful at the same time. And yeah, just it's hard not to get lost into, you know, it being, you know, like about a dance troupe, just seeing the visuals of the dancers, you know, performing, but just the tracks going along with it. It's just, it's such an amazing experience. And the fact that you could tell just like a really engaging and creative story that way, absolutely amazing. I have nothing but nice things to say about this.
Hell yeah. I'm definitely going to have to check that out soon.
But not for the faint of heart. Like, this is, in terms of the horror and like, you know, just absolute just gore of this movie, I would say this is, there's bits in this that kind of make Midsommar look far less disturbing. Like, this is a very disturbing movie. It goes in some just very just difficult places, but it's just so good.
Wow. I am very much more even looking forward to watching that movie now.
Yeah,
I mean, as I said at the top, it was one of the ones that I missed that I really wanted to see from this year, and hearing this just makes me want to watch it so much more.
Exactly. I'm happy to hear that, and I hope you like it. I'm excited to talk to you about
it. Hell yeah.
Whenever you see it, just prepare yourself. Like, it is very intense.
All right. Hell yeah. All right, moving on.
Number 7?
My number 7 is going to Olivia Wilde's Booksmart.
Very nice.
Booksmart is maybe the funniest movie of the year? For me, at least, I think.
Absolutely.
Just top to bottom, just a great comedy. Booksmart is the comedy of the year. What can I say about this movie? It's basically Superbad, but if Superbad was with teenage girls instead of, you know, McLovin and the rest of the boys. It's actually funny, I just found out last night that Jonah Hill and the main actress from this are brother and sister.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's crazy.
Uh,
Caitlin Dever, is that the one? I think it's Beanie Feldstein.
Okay.
Is actually the younger sister of Jonah Hill.
No way.
Which makes it even crazier that like this movie so much mirrors, you know, the basic plot of Superbad.
Yeah, it's basically Superbad for Zoomers.
It's really great.
Like it's such a clever and fantastic film.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just the story of these two girls who are like top of their class, like, you know, smartest kids in class, right before the end of senior year, like literally like the weekend of graduation. They're like, okay, well, we haven't done anything all our years in high school. All we've done is work for school to get into great colleges, and now we've, you know, been accepted to these great schools, so, you know, let's take one last weekend and do the high school thing. Let's go to a party.
Right.
And they do that, and it, you know, obviously just snowballs into all these different crazy events and sequences that take place. This movie is just so inventive. It's incredibly hilarious all the way throughout. I can't remember a time where I wasn't laughing at this movie, or just like thinking that you know, the sequences were just so creative. The one that I can really point to is the ventriloquist part, or like, you know, I guess that's maybe what you would call it. Man, when they, I don't know, is it they take acid or some whatever drug they take to do that, or do they turn into like Muppets? Is it more Muppets?
Kind of more Muppets.
I couldn't remember if it was like more dummy or puppet, man, it's such a phenomenal movie. Just such a funny movie. Everything you want from a good high school comedy, and also just great to see a version of this kind of film with the female perspective.
Absolutely.
I really loved the characters. The two leads are amazing, and I just can't wait to see what else they do next. Obviously, Beanie Feldstein is phenomenal in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
In the TV series of that.
Which, that came out this year, right?
I think so. It might have, like, been, like, a late 2018 thing?
Okay.
I can't remember.
That's also one of the best TV shows of the year, if that did come out in 2019.
Booksmart is really amazing. I need more people to see this.
Absolutely. Honestly. It's a very slept-on film, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it really deserves better than that, more recognition, because, yeah, it's just such a clever film.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny, so well-written, and I would say probably the best comedy of the year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say this is honestly one of the best comedies of the decade, probably. It's, like, really, it's neck and neck with, like, Superbad.
Yeah.
You know? Like, obviously, Superbad was the previous decade. But just in terms of, like, how good these movies are, like, this is almost to the point that Superbad was. Like, definitely. I could totally see this being, like, you know, the next Superbad, just in terms of, like, cult, or, like, you know, just classic comedy, you know, ranking and, like, where it fits into, you know, just the whole spectrum of comedy films. This is just one of the best that there is.
Absolutely. Honestly,
it's a really phenomenal movie.
Totally agree. That, unfortunately, would be in my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
It was actually on my list
before. Pre-climax.
And then I watched Climax, and I'm like, this thing is fucking insane.
That's fair.
Yeah, but great movie. Absolutely. Go watch Booksmart.
Yes, please. I'm pretty sure that movie kind of didn't do too great at the box office, unfortunately, but you should be able to watch it now. Just, you know, go rent it. It's a perfect movie to just, like, rent.
Absolutely.
And just, like, watch alone or with your friends or whoever. You'll just have a great time.
100%. So my number 7, we actually don't need to cover too much because we talked about it a little bit already. It is The Farewell. I'll just remind you again, go see The Farewell. It's incredible. Absolutely love that movie.
Yep.
And yeah, that's my number 7.
All right.
Number 6.
My number 6 is one that technically, I guess, came out in 2017, but it came out in 2019 in the U.S. for its first time. And that I'm talking about is One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, I really wanted to see this. Yeah, I never got around to that.
One Cut of the Dead, which I think was like the highest grossing movie in Japan in 2017, and like was made on like a $60,000 budget and made like millions and millions of dollars. And it's so deserved.
Mm-hmm.
One Cut of the Dead is such a brilliant movie. It's basically the story of these low rent actors and filmmakers get together to just shoot this little zombie movie together. And then the movie, it turns out that, you know, the characters who are zombies, who are playing zombies, are actually like, there is a zombie outbreak happening while they're shooting this movie. So it's like a fun, you know, it's a fun, story conceit that, you know, they're making this zombie movie, but then like they're actually literally zombies. Mm-hmm. But that is just, man, that I can't talk about this movie because there's a great turning point in this movie that makes it into a totally separate film.
That's what basically. I always hear about this movie.
This movie is basically two separate films, more or less. And without getting into it, the second part of this movie is so brilliant and it's so much fun and it's unlike anything you'll ever see. There's no movie like this, and it's just so smartly written. All the characters are great. It's dramatic and it's funny and it's just out there. It's, man, it's amazing. I can't speak highly enough of this movie.
I need to see this soon.
If anyone out there has Shudder, the horror movie streaming service, or if you don't, sign up for it, because it's, one, it's great, and two, it has One Cut of the Dead, which I really want everyone to see because it's such a fun movie. It's so inventive. It's phenomenal.
I can't wait to watch it. Yeah, that's great to hear that, and it's great to see it rank so high.
Yeah, it's, on your list. It's seriously just unlike anything else. It's just so hard to talk about because the turning point of this movie, it's something you need to see without knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really something special.
That's awesome. My number six is the aforementioned earlier on in the episode, Knife Heart. This French film that totally caught me off guard because we literally just saw a trailer for it at Music Box Theater when we were going to see Audition it was screening there. And it was this crazy trailer. It looks like a...
It almost seemed like a parody. Right. This would be something that Quentin Tarantino would have made and put inside of Grindhouse. Like,
exactly.
The trailers in Grindhouse. This is what that felt like, but it's literally a movie.
It was this raunchy, highly pornographic trailer. Just super smutty and hilarious. Mm-hmm. And that was just the trailer for this movie. And when we saw that, we're just like, we gotta go see what this movie is about. And it's just this incredibly great noir film, about Annie, this pornographic film director in France who, happens to
in
keep
like the, doing... in the 80s,
yes,
the early
the
80s. That's a point to make there. Because I think it really drenches this movie in its own style.
Exactly. From just looking like an 80s film in a lot of bits to having a very 80s inspired M83 soundtrack that is absolutely incredible in the movie. It's such a thoroughly entertaining, hilarious at moments, just insanely good film. Mm-hmm. I really wish more people would have heard about this or just would have gotten more exposure, but I'm here to tell you on this show, go watch Knife Heart. Absolutely great. And yeah, just all around such a nice surprise from this year. I probably never would have heard of this had we had not seen that trailer. So
seriously,
it was meant to be, because it's a movie that I deeply want to revisit soon, because it just really knocked me out the first time I saw it, and I just think it's a great movie. Mm-hmm.
It's really special to me because I'm a huge fan of the old Italian giallo movies, all the Dario Argento, mm-hmm. Lucio Fulci stuff. But this does that. It captures that entire aesthetic and style so well.
Absolutely.
It's kind of similar to Luca Guadagnino. Is that how you say it? The guy who made Suspiria.
Yeah.
That new Suspiria. It feels like very similar to that. Obviously, they're both going for the same giallo style. But this having no correlation with that, obviously the Suspiria remake, draws very heavily from it, that influence. But so does this, and it was such a surprise, and Just a really strong movie. I really loved it. I'm so sad that I forgot about it when I was making this list. But, you know, definitely a really strong film.
Absolutely.
One that I really, really loved.
Definitely. Definitely. So I think we're at a perfect time to take a little break.
Yeah.
When we come back, top five. And we're back, counting down our top, now five, favorite films of 2019. Here on the Infinite Canvas Ultra 2019 retrospective. Yeah, I'm excited to get back into this. I was sort of thinking that Michael and I's lists in this end, especially within the top four or three, are going to be kind of similar, but yeah. I don't know. Michael has his doubts, but we'll see.
Well, with one of them in particular, and okay. It's going to be because of this next movie I'm about to say. Which I think you would have thought would have ranked higher, but my number five is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, directed by the one and only Quentin Tarantino. Man, this movie is really great. We talked about it a lot, honestly. It was actually our first episode, I believe.
It was
Once Upon a Time.
And actually, you know what, I'm just gonna, before you go on, I'm gonna let you finish, but
go ahead.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is actually my fifth choice.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Now I'm actually really
throwing a wrench into things.
Huh. I'm really interested to know what else you think would be in my top four. But wow, that's awesome that we both ended up at number five. And
I think number four is gonna definitely be different, but we'll see.
Okay,
Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah,
it's interesting because Once Upon a Time at the halfway point of this year was my number one film.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably the same for you, right?
Last time Knife Heart was your first. Yeah.
But obviously you've had a change of heart there.
This has grown on me.
Yeah.
This is that's one of the things I love most about this movie, and I think it's
have you seen it since? Or just
I haven't actually, but honestly
just thinking about it.
From thinking about it, and I actually plan on buying it tomorrow because mm-hmm. The Lighthouse comes out on Blu-ray.
Right.
So I'm going to pick up both of them at the same time. I need to get some new movies. But, it's great having that. I feel like there's really not too many films like this in Tarantino's filmography. I feel like every time I see his movies, immediately I'm just like, yep, I really love this.
Right.
This is great. This one, it was nice to have something that like kind of just made you chew over and like really think about like why I like this so much. And like once you make those realizations and you think back to just like how many countless great performances are scattered throughout this film that doesn't necessarily have, you know, a typical, you know, plot structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very loose. You're just looking into the lives of Cliff, and I'm actually blanking on DiCaprio's character.
Cliff, and it's Cliff Booth, and
we're a terrible podcast.
Hold on, I'm so sorry. It's Cliff and Rick Dalton.
Rick Dalton, exactly. It's like it feels like you're just getting a direct glimpse into their lives and their, you know, experiences in Hollywood in this era, and it's great. It's just so great. It's truly a film for people like us,
mm-hmm.
and I totally get why I've heard some people say that this is their favorite Tarantino movie, because it's just a perfect examination of film nerds, basically.
It's a movie made for film nerds, for sure.
Yeah.
100%. Everything from top to bottom, from the soundtrack, and the cinematography, and the acting. Just the way that the plot structure works and how so much of this movie really is an examination of these two characters, plus Shannon Tate, played by Margot Robbie, but she to a lesser extent, but to even a more interesting, perhaps even more interesting than the other two, even if she doesn't get as much time. It's really just such a well-made movie, and it's everything what you want from a Tarantino movie, I think.
Absolutely.
You get all the action and crazy explosive stuff, and that's more towards the end, and it's again one of the most
it's such a phenomenal ending. It really makes this movie for me.
It really does. It's great.
But,
yeah.
But like the first 2 hours of this 2.5 hour, almost 3 hour movie is really slow. It's really plodding. It's really just embedding you in this world. And Tarantino has crafted the quintessential version of the late 60s here.
Absolutely.
And all of his film styles are intact. You know, everything you know about Tarantino, if you're a fan of his, like, it's all here, all the feet that you want, or don't want.
Yeah.
Depending on your taste. And yeah, it's an actor's movie. It's a film nerd's movie. It's just fantastically written. And I loved it. I just love this movie so much.
Going back to just the kind of, you know, not so much slow burn, but just sort of like the for me, this movie just gave me a lot to chew over. Just mm-hmm. thinking back on DiCaprio's performance in this, there are just so many countless just amazing scenes with him mm-hmm. in this, just completely killing it. And that scene where he's, you know, just on set, he's filming his, you know, Western TV show, and he's just pouring his heart out to the little girl. Yeah. After he's just kind of having this breakdown and just being exhausted from being in the film industry, it's maybe one of the best scenes
yeah.
in the film this year. I absolutely love that scene, and it's just why it just is proof why DiCaprio is one of the best. Like, he is so good.
I would further extend that whole just even outside of that one scene with him and the girl from the show. Just him in that character.
Absolutely.
Playing the villain in that Lancer show.
Yeah.
That entire part. Like, just the scenes of this movie in Once Upon a Time where you're watching Rick Dalton shoot his scenes for this television show. He is phenomenal in this movie. Leo is so great.
Not to mention the bit where he's rehearsing his lines and getting drunk and drunk and yeah. just having, you know, just basically destroying his little trailer that he's mm-hmm. in that he has to rehearse in. It's great.
There's a lot of really great scenes in this movie, obviously. I really love, I know it was a huge controversy, but I really love the scene between Cliff and Bruce Lee.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a really great scene. Again, the ending's phenomenal. I loved all the sequences with Shannon Tate. The scene where she goes and sees her own movie in the theater is so special. This is a like you said, it's a bit different feeling from other Tarantino movies, just in the way that it takes a while to really draw you in, and it's not as bombastic and over the top as what you expect from Tarantino. But it does get there, and it makes it so worth it to to that point, because you've really spent so much time with these characters, and it feels so earned here.
Absolutely. And it's also just a nice change of pace for him as a filmmaker. I feel like, you don't really, this was so unexpected, you know, going into this movie. What we ended up getting, I honestly did not expect mm-hmm. from this movie in a really great way. I think that also that was a really smart decision on his part, because once, you know, people heard he was making a film related to the Manson killings mm-hmm. and Sharon Tate, it's like, I feel like a lot of people have expectations, but haven't seen this, have expectations of how it's going to play out,
right.
But they're in for a really good surprise.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great, just different direction for him to go
mm-hmm.
at this point in his career. And simultaneously a crown jewel in his filmography, in my opinion. Like, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say enough nice things about it.
I also, before we get off of it, I think you mentioned it before, all the side characters, just everyone in this movie is amazing. And there's so many small bits for, like, these huge actors, you know? Like, Al Pacino's in this movie, and he's in it for, like, five minutes.
I almost forgot that he was in this.
Right. Bruce Dern is in there for a couple minutes. What's his name? I'm blanking on Kurt Russell is in this for like a minute. But like every single person in this movie, every actor is really great. They really make the most of their small bit parts and really adds to the world and you know, just the whole style that Tarantino's going for here. It just Absolutely. It makes this movie so complete. It feels like a really complete movie that isn't missing anything. It doesn't really wear out its welcome, even though, like, I'll say, like, halfway through, I felt a little lost. Mm-hmm. Like, not in terms of, like, I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't know where it was going. But just how the movie actually climaxes and where it finishes at, I think, puts everything together in a tight little bow. It's really a stellar movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But only the fifth best movie of the year.
Yep.
So I guess since that was your fifth as well, I will move on to my number four, which I guess we probably don't have to talk too much about, since we already did earlier, and that is Marriage Story. Again, that's directed by Noah Baumbach. I just want to shout out how great Adam Driver is in this movie.
Oh, yeah. One of the best performances of the year.
Man, Adam Driver was everywhere this year. You know, really you think was. Of like Star Wars. He was in. He was in that Amazon movie, The Report, which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about.
I really
about.
Want to see that. Yeah.
The Dead Don't Die.
That's right.
If you remember that one.
That's right.
Yeah, and then this, and I'm sure there's even more that I'm misremembering or forgetting. But Adam Driver is very quickly becoming one of the most exciting actors to watch. And this is easily his best performance for me.
Absolutely.
That I've ever seen. Like, this is probably my favorite performance of the year. Let me look at my top three.
No, there's one that...
There's another one that might beat it out, but Adam Driver in this is really, really phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, again, this Marriage Story really... hurt me a lot, and it's a really phenomenal film. It's so greatly written. Again, like what Dan said about the cinematography and you know, just how this movie is shot is really something special, and just adds to the feel of it and the themes and everything like that. I love this movie. And not to downplay Scarlett Johansson, she is also really phenomenal in this.
Yeah.
But Adam Driver just came out on top for me.
100%.
It's a really, really great movie.
100% agree, yeah. So my number four totally caught me by surprise, and it's a film that I feel like was kind of treated a little unfairly from a production company that I feel like should have more faith in a project like this. I am talking about David Robert Mitchell's Under the Silver Lake, the director of It Follows. This movie is so good, and I just feel like it has just been swept under the rug, and it's just such a shame.
It was so sad. This was one of mine that I almost forgot about, and then it's in my honorable mentions. But man, it is so sad and especially coming from A24,
right.
That this movie was so... hidden. Like, it was supposed to have a big release, I think, last summer. Mm-hmm. I think in 2018. And then it got pulled for some reason, and it finally came out in, like, April of this year, but only video on demand. Like, it didn't even go to theaters.
Right.
Outside of, like, maybe some limited stuff. But
I believe maybe the first time A24 has done something like that. I don't really recall them ever doing that before. But yeah, no, it's really a shame, because it's just such an entertaining movie. It Follows is definitely one of my favorite movies mm-hmm. of this decade. Potentially in the top 10, but I have to give that more thought. And this follow-up, it's just an altogether different animal from It Follows. You can't even really say one is better than the other, because it's just... it's so completely different. It's just such a great... David Lynch-esque noir mystery comedy. It's very lighthearted and goofy.
It's like Mulholland Drive if Mulholland Drive actually made a semblance of sense.
Right.
Because I definitely think that this movie makes more sense initially than Mulholland Drive ever could.
It's like a lighter and more friendly Mulholland Drive. Yes. And it's phenomenal. It follows Andrew Garfield playing the character Sam, who is just this sort of deadbeat, kind of, you know, just dude who's just hanging out, not really doing much with his life, but lives in Los Angeles, obviously, and notices that his neighbor has gone missing, and goes to track down his neighbor to find out where she is, and it ends up just leading him down this rabbit hole of strange experiences and, you know, just crazy left turns. And it also, I would say this movie kind of reminds me a little bit of Inherent Vice by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Sure,
basically
yeah.
just following this character as he goes on his, you know, just his adventures.
His journey.
They're not necessarily, like, what happens to him in this movie. It's not super connected. It doesn't really have, I mean, it does have resolution in the end, but the steps it takes to get there, it's just like you're basically just kind of seeing him through the whole process and seeing him get down to this mystery and try to find this girl, and it's just done in a very, you know, you're just rolling along with him kind of way, and it's so entertaining.
The through line of this movie is, like, there's a point A and a point B, but then there's, like, point A, point 2, point A, point 3.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, branching off into these weird spaces, and then it'll come back and you know, get you back on your way to the resolution. But it's so much fun to watch.
It is.
You know, the entire way through. It really is like a amalgamation of, you know, like you said, Inherent Vice, but also, like, it's Hitchcockian. It's very noir. It's
very,
like, Rear Window-esque, you know?
That's a great comparison.
Especially, you know, because a lot of this movie, or, like, the intentions of his character is that he's, like, spying on his neighbor. It was just a very Rear Window kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah, I think this movie is it's so sad what happened to it, really.
Yeah.
I think this movie could have found an audience. It probably wouldn't have been one of A24's biggest hits, definitely, but, you know, just coming off of how big, It Follows was and having that same director, I think this would have been a great movie to see in theaters. And it's a really fun movie, I think, to, I bet it would be a fun movie to, like, discuss, like, with people afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, I only got to see this by myself, like, you know, renting it a number of months ago, and I, you know, assume you're the same.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it kind of misses out on that, because there is so much to dig into after, like, an initial viewing of it.
And also, it just speaks volumes about Mitchell as a director, just coming off of doing such a great job with the horror genre, and It Follows, and then just proving that he can do an incredibly solid noir mystery. It's a lot. That's some great range for him as a director.
Yeah,
and they're both just such phenomenal movies. And Under the Silver Lake, this is definitely another movie I encourage everybody to go watch. It's on Amazon if you got Prime, which who doesn't?
Yeah.
So yeah,
right.
Go check it out.
I hope, before we get off this, I just want to say I hope that David Robert Mitchell gets another chance. Like, I hope this doesn't, like, really, like, ruin his career in any way, you know?
And it's like, how could it?
Because
I mean
this movie was also very divisive.
It's true.
With critics.
It's true.
Like, it was, I think it's like at like a 50 something percent on Rotten Tomatoes, but I love it. You love it. Like, I know a lot of film nerds who really enjoy this movie. But yeah, with just the way that it was handled by A24, how they just bungled the whole release of it, I hope it doesn't put a wrench into Mitchell's following career.
Yeah. I hope not, too. That'd be very sad.
Yeah.
And it's just extremely undeserved. But
definitely.
Yeah.
Especially for a movie of this caliber, you know? It's
exactly.
Not like he came out with, like, a super bad movie. Like,
right. If it was a total bomb, if it was a Dark Phoenix, then...
Yeah.
Maybe. Understandable, but no, this is high quality.
Yeah.
This is a great film.
Yeah. Similar to my next pick, which is also a great film, and also an A24 movie, I am going with The Lighthouse.
Wow.
Directed by Robert Eggers.
I did not expect that placement. That's crazy.
I am very certain here. I can say with 100% certainty that our top three films are the exact same three films. They're probably in different orders.
I think maybe
seeing as how you just reacted to my choice there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, The Lighthouse is such a tour de force of filmmaking. Robert Eggers, who this is the follow-up to his 2016 film, I believe, The Witch, which I also loved.
And The Lighthouse is, man, what to even start about this movie? It feels like it was made in 1914 or something. Shot in black and white, solely based around these two characters who are living in like the late 1800s, maybe early 1900s, and are the caretakers of this lighthouse in, you know, whatever state it is. I don't know, Maine or whatever.
Look at those, Maine.
Some northeastern United States state. And it's basically just follows their two characters as they live their life for a handful of weeks, maybe a few months, living at this lighthouse all by themselves, and the fallout that occurs, you know, just in their, you know, being shacked up with each other, alone.
Succumbing to madness of the sea.
Yes.
It's such a wonderful movie.
Really is.
It exists in a world all its own. It feels like... I feel lucky to be living in a time where a movie like this exists. Because it is just thoroughly unique. And my God, just on a technical level, so impressive. So creative.
Yep.
Acting level, amazing performances.
These are going to be the performances that I know are going to be snubbed everywhere.
Absolutely.
And it's the saddest thing.
I'm telling you right now, Brad Pitt is going to beat Willem Dafoe for Best Supporting Actor.
I would be surprised if Willem Dafoe even gets nominated.
Feel like he will. But I'm going to go on record right now and just say that Willem Dafoe's performance in that movie, that's my favorite performance in any film this year. I think it would probably be him and then Adam Driver in Marriage Story.
Huh.
I just think what Dafoe does with this character and just how he just does not break for a second. Like, he is just fully locked in this persona, you know, this... just living in this lighthouse, being this, like, you know, man of the sea. It's so great. It's so entertaining. It's so hilarious. I just love him.
It's definitely one of those moments of where an actor really becomes the character.
Absolutely.
You don't even see the actor there anymore.
Not at all.
I would go as far as to say the same for Robert Pattinson as well.
Absolutely.
Here. I think he is exceptional in this movie.
I'd be curious to know how much they ad-libbed a lot of this and,
yeah,
you know, just kind of came up with, you know, just different things to say on the fly.
I feel like the script for this movie could be like 20 pages.
It really
could. You know,
could.
Like, there's not a lot that happens in this film necessarily in terms of, like, moments that you can really pinpoint to. It's a lot of really just you being with these two characters as they're, you know, speaking to each other, trying to get through this long haul of living in this lighthouse together. But man, is it so good.
It's amazing.
It really exceeded my expectations. I was already super hyped for this movie, obviously being a big fan of The Witch and of these two actors, of A24 movies overall. If you couldn't tell from both of our lists, obviously
Right. We're
huge fanboys. But man, this movie took my expectations and just hit them out of the park.
Absolutely.
There's so many fantastic moments in this movie. And it's really... it's just something special. It's like unlike anything you'll see this year or in the last 100 years.
Seriously.
Really. It's just so amazing how Robert Eggers and crew were able to create a movie that looks and feels so much like it was made 100 years ago. It's crazy.
It really
is. It's so awesome. I love this movie.
Me too. Well, beginning into my list very soon. it's coming up. But first, we add to number 3, my most anticipated film of 2019.
Yep.
I'm talking, of course, about the Safdie Brothers' Uncut Gems. Their Safdie Brothers' last film, Good Time, is a movie that is very, very near and dear to my heart. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies, just in general. And I was extremely excited for this, especially hearing about the inclusion of Adam Sandler on this movie, which I've come to find out since then. By the way, I want to take a moment right now to tell anybody listening to this, if you're a fan of the Safdie Brothers and Paul Thomas Anderson, please, please, please listen to their A24 podcast.
I just downloaded that today. Segment. I need to listen to that.
It is incredibly great. It is also totally a dream of mine to hear them talking together, because those are three of my favorite filmmakers in movies coming together and having a really engaging and just nice conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it was super interesting to hear that the Safdie Brothers were just Adam Sandler fanboys, like deeply into him,
having really?
A huge amount of knowledge about his comedies, and he was basically a hero to them.
That's awesome.
Up.
I love that
and,
so much.
It's just great seeing them come together, because the Safdies just have this knack of just collaborating with their lead on their films in just such a beautiful way, where it just feels like it is very viscerally actor and director just giving it their all and making just such utterly unique and incredible films. And Uncut Gems is just such a great follow-up to Good Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to pick. I don't know which one I would put over the other.
Having watched both recently, and actually I saw Uncut Gems a second time just the other day, I'm giving it to Uncut Gems, honestly.
I actually was planning on seeing it again tomorrow.
Yeah,
so.
I think, man, I love Good Time, but Uncut Gems really stands up to a second viewing. Whereas I think with Good Time, it didn't really get that same sense of excitement from it the second time. But Uncut Gems, again, and I won't spoil what happens, but the end, this movie is so stressful. Having even seen it a time before, the week before, and literally knowing every single plot point, I hadn't forgotten anything.
Yeah.
And it was still so stressful. My heart was racing at the end again, the second time. And just being able to... I don't know that this movie is necessarily something you need to see twice. It's not like you're going to really... I don't think I really got more out of it, but it really cemented just how much I loved it.
I think that's kind of the Safdie's style,
yeah,
though. Because
yeah.
Even a movie like Good Time and rewatching that again, the reason I keep going back to that, and I'm sure we'll go back to this, is just the experience it creates, the world it creates, mm-hmm. the way the characters are written. These are crime films that are done on such a very just human level. These don't feel like caricatures
yeah.
presented in these films. Mm-hmm. They feel like real people, like people you could encounter in your life. And it's so intoxicating, just their style and the stories that go with it, too. I mean, it's... You know what the twists and turns are, and like, you know, the intensity that's coming, but it's just still exciting, like with every viewing. So, yeah, no, I can't wait to rewatch this. I feel like it's definitely gonna hold up even stronger for me as well. But, just an incredible performance from Sandler, from everybody involved in this movie.
Everybody, and so many people who are amateurs. They're not a lot of the people aren't even actors, like
right.
you know, a lot of like the side characters. The I just found out the guy that works with Howie at the beginning, like one of the guys that works for him, the guy who gets his shirt ripped,
yeah,
that guy's literally a jeweler.
That's
like
what I heard.
I saw
yeah.
like there's an Instagram video of him like selling jewelry. Julia Fox, who's brilliant in this movie, this is her first role.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a huge part of this movie. The UPS guy or the FedEx guy, whatever it was, like
yeah.
that guy is literally a FedEx guy. Like, and a lot of the side characters, you know, like these very these character actors who you've seen before, and they just put in these really amazing performances, even, you know, in the minute or two that they have, that they just feel so connected with Howard.
Yep.
And Sandler just feels, he plays this part so well. It's again, just like Pattinson and Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse, he becomes the character.
He does.
Within the first like minute, you're not even thinking that this is Adam Sandler anymore.
Exactly.
It's so disconnected in that way, but that's what's so great about this performance. It's the year of the Adams, man. Because it's either Adam Sandler or Adam Driver in Marriage Story that is my favorite performance this year. It's really hard to pick between the two, but I think it really is just so great to see Adam Sandler have a role like this.
Absolutely.
And have it be getting a lot of traction. This movie's performing really well. It's on its way to be the best performing A24 movie ever.
I'm sure
it will make it. I'm certain that it will make it. I think it's within like $10 million already of Lady Bird, which is the number one.
That's awesome.
And a lot of that, I'm sure, comes from the star power of Adam Sandler, but
typical Adam Sandler fare.
I hope that even people who don't think that this is what this is going to be, I hope they can at least take something from it.
I hope so, too.
I think that this movie, I don't know, the crowd I saw it with the second time, it didn't seem like it would have been the regular, A24 crowd, mm-hmm. but people were really enjoying it. They were, at the end, people were gasping, like, people were really excited about it. So I hope that is kind of where this movie is getting to.
I think it is, and it's exciting. That's one of the things, one of the many facets about this film that I love, is that it's, we talked about this in the review, it's just the planning behind this film mm-hmm. is so great. I mean, there's so many complaints about people not going to see films and less of a emphasis on auteur-driven films in a popular mm-hmm. landscape, and this album just, movie. It goes out there and it tries.
Yeah.
It really does, and it's just so smart because, I mean, obviously getting him in the casting, you know, that was a great decision, but I mean, releasing it during Christmas, having mm-hmm. that star power behind it, it kind of proves that, you know, people do, well, at least I hope for people that, you know, maybe hopefully stuck around and watched the entire yeah. thing, it proves that there is a need for that, and that there is so much to that,
mm-hmm.
and that more people should hopefully, you know, take notice of that and want more films like that in the future, and yeah. it achieves it, and it's just so great. I could not be happier for A24. I could not be happier for the Safdies, which is like, after, you know, knowing about Good Time for the 2 years that it's been out, and now seeing this film get so much more traction and give them so much more recognition, it's really crazy. It's really nice to see that.
Yeah. I feel like this typically happens more with musicians and like artists that you like, and then you'll see them have their bigger hit album or something, and you're right. like, oh, it feels great to have like mainstream or bigger audiences finally discover this artist that you like. And that's what's happening here with exactly. Uncut Gems. It's like, I feel so proud of the right. Safdie brothers, you know? Like, this movie's produced by Scorsese. It has Adam Sandler, who is most definitely bringing a lot of the crowd in. Like, Netflix released their numbers, and his movie Murder Mystery was the number one stream thing on Netflix this year, which was a movie that was like critically panned and, you know, whatever, say what you will, but that is even more than Stranger Things that was streamed.
That's insane.
More. So Adam Sandler seems to be like one of the few actors who can get people to watch whatever he does. And it fills me with so much happiness that he was willing to do this role and
worked with two of the best in the biz. Honestly, maybe my favorite filmmakers right now.
Yeah. They're up there.
Yeah.
They're definitely up there. Well, I'll say right now, this is my number two movie of the year.
I had a feeling.
Of course.
And I'm gonna say real quick, The Lighthouse was my number two, but we pretty much covered on that.
All right.
So let's just talk about Uncut Gems a little bit more.
Yeah. One of the things I'll say is that I was so excited to overhear somebody at work. Like, literally someone at work was talking about this movie and, like, recommending it to people. Like, oh, you gotta go see this
That's
movie.
Great.
Have you seen Uncut Gems? And it's you know, that would be me. Like, I'm that guy. I'm the person telling everyone to go see Uncut Gems. That would never in a million years have happened with a Good Time.
No.
It's a testament to this movie. I think this movie is so phenomenal. And it's got a phenomenal soundtrack. Again, the second time seeing it, it was even better. Like, it hurt, it hit even more.
I bet.
Everyone I've talked to, like, even my friend Javier saw this movie the other day, and he was like, awesome. That soundtrack is amazing. And,
that's
like,
awesome.
That's not even something I would expect him to really, you know, pinpoint or, like, you know, think that. But, yeah, that One of Tricks Point Never soundtrack really boosts this movie into another level, just as it did in Good Time.
And I really hope the Safdies collaborate with him again.
Yeah.
I hope they just kind of collaborate going forward.
I think I saw like a forum, it's like a Reddit post maybe, where people were like, oh, who do you wish that the Safdie brothers would do a score with next time? And I'm like, just have it be 106.9 Never forever, please.
They're a perfect match.
They're the perfect fit. At least if the Safdie brothers continue making this style of movie, they should never stray away from.
And I feel like they're not really going to stray away from this. I think this is kind of their niche.
There's also people out there saying, when is Marvel going to give them a movie, you know? Like, could you imagine? At this point, I would imagine DC giving them a movie faster than Marvel
I cannot imagine them coming even close to that genre. Man.
Imagine their like Batman movie or something.
That would be insane.
But
that would be great.
That's a totally different discussion anyways, but I really love Uncut Gems. It's one of the best movies of this year and maybe one of my favorite movies of the entire decade. It's just such a complete film, and yeah,
it's absolutely great.
But it's not the best movie of this year, Dan.
And I'm 100% confident we both have the same pick, and that pick is, of course, Parasite.
Yep, Bong Joon-ho, the South Korean master of cinema, Bong Joon-ho, who has directed literally the best movie of this year. Hands down, not even like, yes, it's my favorite movie of this year, but probably also just objectively the best movie this year.
Absolutely.
Parasite is so smart.
And this was the film that after I walked away from it, I just was like, there is nothing.
Yep.
There is nothing that will top this. As much as I was hoping that Uncut Gems would, I just had a feeling that even after getting out of that, nothing would hit me and just move me in the level that this film did. And I was right. It just stuck with me so much. And it is just a mastercraft in filmmaking.
Parasite really hits every single emotion. It's funny. It's sad. It's thrilling. It's surprising. Like, it really hits every single mark. And it does everything so perfectly.
It does.
And it the best part of this movie is that it just, kind of similar to like something like One Cut of the Dead or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where there's just this big turning point in this movie and it turns into something completely different and it still feels so cohesive and it's just as good, if not better, than the first half of the movie. Bong Joon-ho is just a phenomenal filmmaker. This movie looks great. The actors are, you know, if this was an American movie, every actor in this would be nominated for Best Actor at the Oscars. Best Actress, you know. But of course, there's a bias against foreign films. I hope that this movie will get nominated for Best Picture.
I really hope so.
I'm sure it will win Best Foreign Film, but I would love to see this get Best Picture, because man,
I hate it, but I feel like it's gonna get snubbed. The Lighthouse.
Yeah, The Lighthouse for sure, I think, will get snubbed. I have better hopes for Uncut Gems, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
But I would, you know, especially with the 10 choices that the Oscars makes for Best Picture these days, I would hope that it's at least nominated. Speaking of Parasite, but man, this movie is just so original.
And so complete. Yes, you go through so many different arcs in this. I mean, it literally feels like my first experience watching this, and the way the film starts, and just, you know, the first half of the movie, it kind of just felt like, is this even the same movie that I was expecting to see? Like, from the trailers? It has such a lighthearted, easygoing nature to it. It's this really lovable family, and they, you know, try to get jobs working for this rich family. It's just so easygoing.
It feels like so innocent.
It does.
They're like, you know, lying to this rich family, but they're not doing anything deviant.
Right.
You know, yes, they're, you know, making the other caretakers for this family, you know, they're losing their jobs for this,
but they're doing bad things, but it's delivered to you as the audience in like a very easygoing way, and then just reality just bitch slaps you. It just it sets in such a heavy way, but it's just so impressive that it achieves this in its runtime. It just covers so much in really not that long of a time. It's not,
yeah, it's a little over 2 hours, but like it doesn't, it honestly breezes by.
It and does.
It feels, and it's like amazing. You said, so complete.
It's amazing that it achieves everything that mm-hmm. it does in that time, because there's just so many ideas that are brought to you, and it's just executed in such a great way.
One of my favorite sequences of this entire year, and it's actually a video I just watched pretty recently. Nerdwriter on YouTube made a video about the montage in this film, where they, you know, when they're trying to take out the main caretaker for the family, and you know they're running their lines, the poor family's running their lines, and. You know, finding out more things, and just how smartly, just how elegantly Bong Joon-ho is able to take a concept and you know, dose it down into like this 2-minute montage that is so perfectly paced and tells a complete story in itself.
Right.
It's a masterwork.
It is.
And that's this entire movie, honestly. There's no one part where I was like bored or unsure where this was going. It was just so much fun to watch all the way through, and I'm so sad I haven't seen it another time. I can't wait to see this again. I think it comes out at the end of this month, and I'll be there day one buying it for sure. It's such a stellar movie.
It is. It's truly a modern classic.
Yeah.
And everybody should see this.
Mm-hmm. I loved, I don't know if you saw it, but Bong Joon-ho, he won Best Foreign at the Golden Globes yesterday.
And his
winning speech was basically, his quote was, you know, as long as you can look past the 1-inch barrier of subtitles, you'll be able to watch a lot of really amazing films. And
that was so perfect.
Oh my God, it's such a backhand to all of the people that everyone knows, and we all know, and you know, there's so many people who won't watch movies because they don't want to read, and there's so many great films from this is the third in our list, I think, because you had two French films. You
That's
had
true.
Knife Heart and Climax, and now we have Parasite. I don't think that I had... Oh, and I had One Cut of the Dead. So that's four foreign language films in our top 10 this year, and you could maybe even put the farewell into that as well, happily. There's, especially coming from like Asian countries, you know, from Japan and especially from South Korea, there's so many great movies. Parasite obviously being one of them. I really wish that was never a problem for anybody.
I know.
It really dampens you know, the effect that a lot of these movies could be having at a global scale, just because people don't want to watch with subtitles.
Exactly, and you miss out on such great art because of it. And it makes me sad to think that there are people that would not watch a film like this for that reason. It's just very disheartening.
Yeah.
Because it's truly genius and just such an expertly crafted movie.
But it's doing well. Wikipedia says it's at $130 million worldwide. That's phenomenal for a movie like this.
That's really great.
That makes me so happy. I hope a lot more people do end up seeing this movie. It really is the best movie of this year for me, and one of my favorites easily of this decade.
And hopefully it gets some recognition during awards time, because, I mean, honestly, that's a big selling point for a lot of people to see movies and to maybe see this if they hadn't seen it before or weren't really exposed to it before. I mean, I really hope that happens come war time. I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but I really hope it happens.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. Do you have any more to say about Parasite?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think just that it's phenomenal. I absolutely loved it. And yeah, just without a doubt, like I said, after my first time seeing it, I just knew right then and there that'd be my favorite film of the year.
Yeah, well, before we get off, I will say I do want to point out just the thematic value of this movie, how just poignant its messages are.
Absolutely.
And you know, the idea of its, you know, the whole movie is really saying, like, these socioeconomic, this class division that is occurring in South Korea and really can be related to any country in the entire world, probably.
Absolutely.
At least any first world country. Yeah, it's so smartly written, and just the way that everything plays out is so incredible.
Given that element of, you know, showcasing the economic class, I mean, it's a very perfect film for a time like now.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a message that translates to everybody.
Yep.
Because there are people here in the United States.
You don't even need subtitles for this message.
You can relate to it.
Yeah.
And you can see that, you know, it's similar size, so mm-hmm. similar perspective. So, yeah, great movie.
Parasite, amazing movie.
Both our favorite film of 2019.
It's great. Yeah,
yeah.
High five. Ah, man.
Yeah, no, what a great year of films. It was really fun putting together these lists.
What a really amazing year. You know, I just want to, like, shout out some of the honorable mentions I have here that we didn't even talk about, like The Irishman,
absolutely.
Jojo Rabbit, Knives Out.
Knives Out, definitely.
Like, those are three that I could definitely see, you know, having been on this list in a lesser year. Toy Story 4.
Absolutely. Probably the best animated film of the year.
Avengers Endgame came out this year.
A fantastic blockbuster, like one of the best popcorn flick of the year. Absolutely amazing.
What a phenomenal year for movies. Definitely one of the best in recent times. And yeah, even just like outside of, you know, like the really great stuff, there's a lot of good, just like, you know, run of the mill, but, you know, fun, enjoyable experiences. Your Child's Play.
Stuber.
Your Stubers.
What a fun movie.
Your Rambo.
Rambo Last Blood.
Thank you. Not Hobbs and Shaw, unfortunately.
Yeah, sadly.
But yeah, this is just like a really great year.
Absolutely.
I'm really, really excited to see what next year brings. But even, hell, Ad Astra, another one from this year that I almost forgot about mentioning.
One of the best movie-going experiences I've had this year, seeing that in IMAX. It was a breathtaking experience, like beautiful that way.
Yeah.
It was great.
What a great year of movies.
Absolutely. Here's to 2020. Hopefully some more great stuff comes out this year. I'm sure it will.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that wraps up our top 10 films of 2019.
It does.
Before we go, I do want to just shout out my top 10 list, my written list that will go up on infinitecanvasultra.wordpress.com tomorrow. Before Friday comes, when we will have our final podcast for this week, which will be based around my top 10 video games of 2019, Dan's top 10 comic books of 2019, and maybe a little something extra.
Yeah, a little surprise for all of you. Yeah, I won't spoil it. We'll get into that later. But yeah, no, it's this is our list week, Infinite Canvas Ultra's list week. Thanks for tuning in, listening to us. Yeah, look out for Michael's list tomorrow. It's going to be great. It's going to be great seeing it written out.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you peeped my top 30 albums list.
If you haven't, yesterday. Go back to Monday, listen to our top 10 albums, and then check out Dan's top 30 album list on the same website.
Exactly. And yeah, that's about all I got. I guess we'll see you on Friday, right? You'll be hearing us on Friday.
You'll hear us on Friday. You'll read us on Thursday. You'll hear us on Friday.
You'll smell us on Saturday.
Yes. So sweaty, so stinky from podcasting so long.
Oh, working too hard. See you guys later.
Yeah.
This week's episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra is sponsored by Midwest Action. For more information on their releases and events sponsored by Midwest Action, you can head to MidwestAXN.com or search MidwestAXN at Bandcamp. Midwest Action. Listen local.